I find it fascinating, this scene that we gather around on Maundy Thursday, this retelling of the meal that Jesus shared with his disciples. Ever since I was a child, I've been fascinated with art and the depiction that we get of this scene of Jesus with his disciples gathered around a table with loaves and fish and a cup of wine. We had a portrait in the home that I grew up in that hung on the wall of the Lord's Supper. And as a little child, I would stare at it as I would eat my breakfast at my cereal for breakfast in the morning. I've always wondered what was going through the minds of the disciples. Did they know the weight of the moment that they were experiencing? Or to them, was this another Passover meal like others they had celebrated in their lifetime? Were they fully aware that things were drastically about to change for them and certainly for Jesus? You could make the argument that the disciples had a lot of preparation for what was to come. All along through John's gospel and the synoptic gospels, Jesus is trying to prepare and warn his disciples for what will happen to him and to them in Jerusalem. Over and again, Jesus has told them that the Son of Man must suffer, be handed over, arrested, crucified, and only after experiencing this death will new life come again. But every time throughout the Gospels that Jesus tries to explain this to the disciples, they seem confused and bewildered. They don't fully grasp what is happening. I don't know if they understood that this would truly be the last meal, this side of the crucifixion, that they would share with Jesus. But what we know and what we see in this text is the heart of Jesus. It's as clear as crystal. There are no parables to explain some kingdom concept about what heaven on earth looks like. There's no long prose or fancy speech that Jesus gives. There's no miraculous sign or healing. There are simply words and humble actions. But through those words and humble actions, Jesus reveals the heart of all his ministry. I love how profoundly simple the message for Jesus to his disciples is on this night. We don't get much from John's gospel about what takes place at the table. That's found in the other gospels. John's gospel focuses on what happens outside of the table. Jesus gets up. He ties a towel around himself. He takes off his outer robe. And he adopts the position of a humble servant. Some of this is lost on us in our culture. When we walk into our friends' or family members' homes, there's no one waiting for us in the threshold with a basin of water to wash our feet, is there? But this was common practice for the disciples and for Christ. It was purely practical. They lived in a dusty world with dusty roads. Roads filled with the scraps from the marketplaces and the feces of animals. It was the position of extreme humility for somebody to wash somebody else's feet. And this is exactly the position Jesus chooses to adopt to reveal the full glory of God. Did you catch that? I find this remarkable. There are two parts of this scene in John's gospel that have jumped off the page to me this year. The first is after it all takes place. Jesus washing the disciples' feet, even the feet of Judas, who he knows will betray him. Jesus returns to the table, and later in the conversation, he declares, now it has taken place. Now that I have washed your feet, the glory of God has been revealed. Did you catch that? The disciples might be scratching their head at this moment. What? Lord, this doesn't even compare to when you were on that hillside and you took loaves and fish and you multiplied it and fed 5,000 people. The glory of God was on the hillside. That was far more glorious than this. Or maybe others would have said, remember when you were walking on the water? You were like hovering above it and you called Peter to join you. And Peter, remember when even you, Peter, you took a few steps on the water until Jesus had to rescue you? That was far more spectacular and glorious than this. Or what about that moment? Do you remember that moment when we were gathered in that home in Galilee and all these people were packed in and people were trying to get in, and so some people climbed onto the roof and they opened up the thresh in the roof and they lowered that man down in front of us. We had to push people out of the way, and that man who couldn't walk, he left walking. Do you remember that? Or the glory and the beauty of that moment when you spoke to that woman at the well who was there in the middle of the day so she could avoid the other women because of the shame she was experiencing in her community. And do you remember how you spoke to her and you asked her for water, but you gave her living water? Do you remember that? That's where the glory of God was revealed. And Jesus says, no. Those are wonderful moments. They might be in your highlight reel. But for Jesus, the moment of ultimate glory, he tells us it takes place in a dirty, stinky basin of muddy water. Church, this challenges me. Because if I'm honest with you, this is not often my personal definition of glory. Do you know what my personal image that I think of for glory? There's a few of them, but the one for me that is just the most glorious moment, it takes place during the Olympics. Now, the Olympics are right around the corner. Anybody love the Olympics? I love the Olympics. I'm so excited this summer because I have a budding swimmer in our household. Our daughter's 11, will be 11 years old, and she just competed in the Junior Olympics, and she's really excited to watch the real deal. For me, the moment of glory that I just think is such a beautiful moment is the medal ceremony. There's the three-tiered podium, and you know the goal. The goal is to be on the highest platform on that podium, the gold medal moment. And I love watching the ceremonies where they put those medals around their head and they'll put a laurel wreath upon their head. And as they're standing tall and proud holding flowers or a bouquet, the flag of the gold medalist will unfurl behind them. And then with the full brass and the accompaniment of musicians, the national anthem of the gold medal victor will play. And right there you see this Olympian standing tall and proud with the medal around their chest. I think to myself, if that were me, I'd never take that medal off. I'd wear it everywhere. Glory! We have all sorts of images like this, don't we, of what glory looks like culturally? We feel glorious, don't we, when we earn that advanced degree and maybe we get a new prefix in front of our name. We feel glorified when our kids do something good for once and make us look good. Honey, you're on the honor roll. I'm going to put a bumper sticker on my car and let everybody know. We get so wrapped up in wanting the esteem and the appreciation of others. And so Maundy Thursday, if it does anything initially, it should challenge us. It should challenge our notion as followers of Jesus of what glory looks like. Do you know what glory looks like according to Jesus? I have to imagine it looks like the third shift nurse down the street at Bethesda North, who's got far too many patients because another nurse called off. And she's running from room to room and she has to help somebody because they they wet their bed. She has to clean them, all while extending dignity, love. You know what glory looks like is that sanitation worker who comes down your street early in the morning and takes the leftovers of what you've eaten, what you've consumed, puts it in a big truck and then puts your bin back in your driveway and then goes to your neighbor and does that for them. Glory looks like a teacher who out of her own pocket helps pay for kids' lunches and toiletries so that they can have what they need. Glory looks like humble, never seen, often overlooked service. And if Jesus is trying to drive any point home for his followers, it's that they need to be anchored in this kind of love. I think Jesus understood he would go through the darkest night, he would face a crucifixion, and by golly, he would be resurrected 3 days later, and the disciples would go on to call him King of Kings, Lord of Lords, Prince of Peace, the Alpha and the Omega. The church would have the greatest story ever to tell about love and life winning, but I have to wonder if Jesus was a little concerned and a little worried that after he would ascend back to the Father, the disciples would get so overtaken by a culture concerned with esteem and dominance and power. This had to be a fear. Why did it have to be a fear? Because his own disciples were struggling with it as they followed him. Do you remember the scene where he turns around and he says, "What are you two talking about? Oh, Lord, which one of us will sit at your right hand and which at your left hand when you're in your glory?" Jesus says, "You want to be glorified? Then wrap a towel around your waist and wash your brother's feet." Goodness. The church for 2,000 years has done beautiful, amazing, holy things in the name of Jesus, and we've also gotten it so wrong. We've gotten it so wrong so often. You know, nothing against the fancy robes and the gold-plated lights and the, And this doesn't even compare to the cathedrals and the basilicas built all over the world. And yes, they're beautiful, and I give thanks for it, but also it feels somewhat incongruent, doesn't it? With the man that said, "You call me Lord and teacher, but I'm showing you what I truly am, a servant." Is our image of God that of a regal king or queen, or is it of a humble nun in the streets of Calcutta bandaging wounds? What? Is there room for both? Possibly. But on this night, on the night that Jesus will die, be arrested and handed over, the final meal that he will share, his parting wish is that his disciples would adopt a position of humble service and love. "I command you, love one another. Don't love those that are powerful. Don't love those that can do something for you. Love your enemy. Love, serve, pour out from what has been poured into you." If you read through John's gospel, you know that earlier in the gospel, somebody washed Christ's feet, Mary. She washed them with expensive perfume and her tears. She dried his feet with her hair. I have to wonder if the outpouring of love that Mary gave to Jesus is part of what equipped him to love and wash the feet of his disciples. Because isn't that how love works in our lives? We are only able to love other people because of the love that has been poured into our lives. And here's what breaks my heart. There are so many people in our world that have never had love poured into them. At least not godly love. Sacrificial love. There are so many people in this world that have been abused and misused, people who are lonely and aching and hurting and yearning to know that they are loved. We, disciples of Jesus that have lived imperfect lives, that don't always get it right, that often get it wrong, that get consumed with the wrong things, if we have anything, we have the message of a God who would so love us and the world. And that love from God and the imperfect love we receive from one another in Christian community should fuel us to go into that world and to show other people who have never experienced real love what it looks like. Church, this is our mission. It is to love the world. Jesus does not tell us on this final night, you know what I want for you? I want you to go to the synagogue every week. Will you do that for me? He doesn't say, I want you to read your Torah every night, Alex. He doesn't even say, I want you to have doctrinal purity. I want you to believe the right things. He simply says, love one another. That's it. That's my dying wish, that you would love. And you'd be so filled with that love that it would emanate into the world. Yes, Jesus wants the disciples to go and make disciples, go tell other people about the gospel. But I think he understood the way they would actually show the world good news is by embodying it. Yes, imperfectly. A new commandment I give you. Love one another. In a few minutes, Pastor Alex and I will put two chairs here and we'll have two basins of water. And you might not feel comfortable coming forward to have your foot washed. Let me explain it to you. You'll sit in the chair. You'll put your foot out. We'll lightly hold your heel. We'll pour water over your foot. We won't scrub it. There's no soap. We're not going to tickle. We're going to pour water over your foot. And we'll gently dry it with a towel. And you can say, I don't know how I feel about this. Folks, I don't know how I feel about this. But I have learned over the years of doing this practice that there is something beautiful and holy in the act. And if there's any encouragement that we take from this, that this really represents not just your pastors seeking to model what Jesus has commanded us to do, it's an encouragement and a reminder that the one who is truly washing your foot tonight, it's Christ. It's Christ through us. And as your feet are washed, as your mouth is fed, as the very body and blood, as Jesus gives his very self to you tonight, the encouragement and the challenge we have, the commandment that we are given is to go out into this world, to wash, to serve, to break our own bodies for the sake of others. For this is how love grows, one by one, two by two, four by four. And as they say in Haiti, love grows around in a circle and it'll come back knocking on your front door. Amen.